Welcome to Sharp Insights, conversations with your plan giving experts, a podcast for development professionals. Whether you're new to the field or looking to enhance your existing program, we will provide practical tips, expert advice, and real-world stories to deepen your understanding of plan giving. If you're committed to securing long-term support for your nonprofit, you've come to the right place.
Welcome to Sharp Insights, conversations with your plan giving experts. I'm your host, Grant Miller. Next year commemorates a major milestone in charitable giving. We'll be celebrating the 100th anniversary of the American Council on Gift Annuities. Founded in 1927, the ACGA has helped establish the standards, rates, and best practices that guide one of the most long-standing planned gifts today, the charitable gift annuity, which has existed for nearly 200 years. Returning to our podcast today is Phil Purcell. Phil is a 2025 CGP Hall of Fame inductee, the director of plan giving for the Salvation Army Central Territory, and the editor of Plan Giving Today. He currently serves as the board president of the American Council on Gift Annuities. Phil, thanks so much for coming back to the show. We really appreciate you being back for a second time.
Thank you, Grant. I'm honored to be here with you and everybody at the Sharp Group.
Awesome. So starting out, can you just give us a quick elevator pitch about the role the ACGA serves in the charitable community?
Well, Grant, the primary role of the ACGA is to provide reliable rates that charities can rely on that will, in the main, provide both income for the annuitants and allow for a healthy residual for the use of the charity at the death of the annuitants. Our recommended rates assume a hoped-for residual of approximately 50% of the original gift amount. There's no guarantee. The economy goes up and down. People live longer or shorter. There are a variety of factors that will affect how much is left at the end. But through our surveys, we've discerned that more than 50% for most charities overall does remain at the end of the death of the annuitants. Now, that said, there are individual cases where some annuitants live longer than projected life expectancy. There are some cases where the annuity is set up during a down market cycle and there's not enough there in the long run to pay the annuitant and they go underwater. But overall, in the main, across programs, more than 50% is the projected hoped-for residual, and the actual experience is a bit more than 50% for most organizations. It's gone down a little bit over the years, but it would be closer to 60% as a residual on average across most organizations. So that recommendation of rates is our primary focus. Secondly, another key focus area of us is education. We have had a conference every other year for a number of years, but we've reevaluated that. We're now emphasizing webinars, and we've had a very, very healthy response to our webinar series. For member organizations who pay a fee every year to be a member of ACGA, those webinars are free. We also have a boot camp in the works that we're planning. It's not ready to roll out yet, but that'll be a wonderful educational experience, both for beginning, intermediate, and advanced. So education is, and we offer a lot of educational materials at our website. A third area that's prominent in our thinking is ethics. We work with the National Association of Gift Planners to create the model standards of practice for the charitable planning profession, and we promote ethics and ethical standards. A final category of activity would be monitoring and recommending regulations for gift annuities that make sense and are not detrimental to the activity of gift annuities. In some states, the gift annuities are heavily regulated, California, New York, et cetera. Some states, like Indiana, no regulations. So we work to monitor those state regulations. We try to work behind the scenes to make sure those regulations make sense and are not detrimental to fundraising for gift annuities. So we have, you know, a variety of important tasks that we work to succeed.
And so the ACGA turns 100 in 2027. In your mind, what has allowed the organization to last so long? And what do you think that says about charitable gift annuities as a plan giving vehicle?
Right. I think that, of course, the thoughtful commitment of our volunteer board of directors has been a driving force of this from the very beginning. We've had very capable, committed volunteer leadership. We've not always even had an association manager or employee of any sort. It's all been, we currently have a paid association manager who assists our organization, but it's driven by a lot of volunteer services. And I would say that that commitment to excellence has resulted in the fulfillment of the various functions I mentioned earlier, most especially the recommendation of reliable rates, and that those have proven to be very fruitful for organizations and something they've been loyal to and have decided is worth supporting and following. So again, the key has been an absolute commitment by very helpful and intelligent and experienced leaders, and also the hiring of good expert counsel, actuarial, accounting, tax, legal, finance, investment, to recommend great rates, as well as the other work I mentioned.
All right. Well, as a history buff, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the history of the gift annuity and what are the three biggest changes that you've seen in the charitable gift annuity over the years?
Yeah, well, one of the hallmarks in the history of gift annuities was a lawsuit that alleged that gift annuities were a form of price fixing, a violation of the Sherman antitrust law. The argument being that by charities collaborating together to follow rates that are recommended, no charity is required to follow the rates, but they are simply recommended. But the lawsuit was dismissed by virtue of the U.S. Congress passing specific exemptions of gift annuities from the Sherman antitrust law. The Philanthropy Protection Act and then a subsequent bill got that job done. So we are comfortable and confident that from a federal law standpoint, that has significantly paved the way for gift annuities looking towards the future. But that was quite a dramatic event at the time it happened historically. Other factors I would say that are changes I've seen over these years has been a real growth or in the creativity of the use of gift annuities. For example, in the early years, you would have seen gift annuity minimum amounts very low. In the Salvation Army, we would do gift annuities for $1,000. And over time, that minimum dollar amount has gone up. Now our minimum in the Salvation Army is $10,000, and $10,000 is a fairly common minimum across gift annuity issuing organizations. Some have even a little higher, but that's a fairly common minimum. So that has been a factor. Another change that has emerged are the use of assets for gift annuities, stock, real estate, more creative applications of gift annuities. More recently, with the qualified charitable distribution or IRA charitable rollover, a law was passed, in the last couple of years that allows a tax-free rollover, IRA rollover from an IRA to fund a charitable gift annuity. So that's been a very interesting new development that's opened the door to a lot of new gift annuities for organizations. In addition, I would say that with the baby boomer generation and the trillions of dollars in qualified plans and the 10-year withdrawal rule for inherited IRAs, that a lot of people are looking at testamentary gift annuities to receive IRA money to then provide an income flow to their heirs for their lifetime, rather than being limited to 10 years, which an inherited IRA must withdraw within 10 years. So the use of testamentary gift annuities or charitable trust, but a gift annuity is a very, very popular technique, receiving those IRA assets, then paying to the heirs or loved ones. The deferred gift annuities, where the gift is made now, but the income starts in the future, very popular for parents or grandparents to set up a deferred annuity for young ones that will help provide an extra retirement income when they hit an older age. And then there's a flexible option that adds to that deferred attractive opportunity. So gift annuities have not been a static gift technique, very creatively used, but also I would say supported. Now, this over these past years, the state regulations in some cases have become quite detailed. And as I said, New York, they now have rules around rates. California, very, very specific rules around asset allocation of reserve pools, that kind of thing. So that has evolved over the century as well. So not static, very dynamic.
Absolutely. Let's zoom in just a little bit for our gift officers out there. What is your, I guess, quote unquote, typical charitable gift annuity donor look like today? And, you know, for a gift officer, what are the signs that suggest that a donor might be a good candidate for a discussion about a charitable gift annuity?
Yeah, that's a great question, Grant. Well, you know, the most popular type of gift annuity is what we call the immediate payment gift annuity, where a person gives cash or assets now and they get the payments right away rather than being deferred into the future, as I mentioned a minute or so ago. So for immediate payment annuities, they're most attractive for people age at a minimum 60, 65, 70 and older. So age is a big indicator of interest in gift annuities, especially age 70, let's say. You know, and the older they are, as they get into their late 70s and 80s, much, much more attractive because the gift annuity rates increase as age increases. And so the older you are, the higher the rate you receive. But the starting point would be age maybe somewhere 60, 65, most definitely age 70 would be a key factor at looking who a typical annuity donor would be. Another would be someone who's loyal to your organization, most likely. Longtime loyal donors, you know, they've shown commitment to your organization. They trust your organization because at the end of the day, the gift annuity payments are backed by the assets of your organization. So they know you, they trust you, they've supported you. So longtime loyal donors would be another attribute to look at. Another would be, you know, these are folks that they're looking at the gift annuity as a reliable, steady stream of income. Now, in some cases, it might mean somebody who's adverse to stock market risk. So our surveys tend to show that the most common gift annuity donor is a retired woman, sometimes a widow, sometimes not, but in her 70s, retired. And again, maybe not interested in stock market up and down, right? And they like the simplicity of the fixed payment of the annuity contract. So that would might be a factor. Now, other people I've worked with, they are in the market and they're the stock market with other investments, and they're looking at the gift annuity as just another source of dependable, reliable fixed income and not, again, subject to market risk. So those would be some of the key factors. And well, there's a simplicity, kind of a deceptive simplicity of gift annuities. It's a typically a 2-page contract. You know, it's not a 12-page trust document. And so folks tend to like that. Now, look, gift annuities can be complicated. Don't get me wrong. A lot of issues involved, tax issues especially, but I would say those would be the attributes of the profile of an annuity donor.
Yeah, age and loyalty make sense and are definitely things that I've thought about before. But the insight that a donor might appreciate certainty over risk, I think,
yes,
is a great thing to consider,
you know,
there.
Especially when the market is down or the market's uncertain, right? When the periods of time are uncertain in the economy or the world, the annuity contribution might be attractive.
Well, a lot of the organizations that I work with don't offer gift annuities at all. And I'm not exactly sure why, but I know that not every organization should offer gift annuities. So what are the circumstances under which you'd recommend starting a CGA program for an organization and when you might advise against starting one?
Right. Well, and these would be mirror images. So my answers are kind of the way you flip the information would be yes or no to gift annuities. So for example, one would be you want to be a financially secure organization. So if you're not financially secure, if you're a newly started grassroots organization, you don't have steady, reliable streams of revenue, you don't have an endowment or savings, maybe not gift annuities. But if you have a substantial or the starting of an endowment, you don't have deep debt or liabilities, you might have debt, but nothing that's terribly damaging to the financial statement, you know, reliable debt that's manageable with your revenue stream. You have a donor base. So you have donors, and especially donor base of people age 65, 70 and up. So you've got to have a donor base that meets the profile that I talked about earlier. You've got to have a secure financial situation with savings, a manageable debt, and so forth. Plus, you know, you have the ability with appropriate staffing and marketing budget to actually promote gift annuities and to explain them and answer questions. So you've got the ability and the budget for marketing and staffing to do a good job with gift annuities. You know, a lot of gift annuity donors, if satisfied, they become repeat gift annuity donors. So effective management becomes very, very important. So those would be, I would say, key distinguishing factors between success or not, whether you should start a gift annuity program.
And for organizations that do have an existing annuity program, what is some advice for marketing gift annuities? You know, you mentioned certain donor segments. Should they just prioritize age and loyalty, or are there any other ideas that you have for marketing these and getting the word out?
I always say about marketing gift annuities, and this gets to your just prior question, what is the hallmark of success with gift annuities? You know, if you're going to do gift annuities, do gift annuities, market them. It does no good to just have a program and not tell anybody about it. You know, and in particular, think of it this way. You know, insurance companies, the way they manage the risk of their insurance product is by mass marketing, having as many people in the insurance pool as possible. Same thing with gift annuity program. The more gift annuity donors you have in your pool, some will live longer, some will live less time, but they'll average towards the mean. And so you find security and success with gift annuity programs the more you market them and the more you draw donors into your gift annuity pool. And that's very important towards success, is the idea of getting the word out, marketing in all the various ways. And if you don't do that, and not only doing marketing, but the consistency of the communication, very important. You know, not just one thing a year or every other year. No, you've got to have some consistency of promoting the gift annuity program on your website, through emailing letters, as part of your overall strategic plan gift marketing plan. The gift annuity promotion has to be embedded in that plan with strategy and intentionality, or else you won't maximize. And again, targeting the population criteria that we talked about earlier. So those would be, I'd say, some of the key attributes of making sure you are able to get the job done. And well, another one would be, of course, as fundraising staff are meeting donors, talking to donors, creating proposals for donors, they need to understand what the profile of the gift annuity donor might look like that I talked about earlier. And when they see an opportunity to weave a conversation about gift annuities into a donor proposal, whether it's a standalone proposal for a gift annuity or a blended proposal of a current gift and a gift annuity, then that's another great way to market gift annuities. And using the fundraising staff to make sure they're bringing it up in their conversations as well. And of course, along the marketing range, the power of the testimony is gold, right? So, you know, having gift annuity donors who are happy, it works, they're willing to give their picture, their story, talking about what, of course, it's always about the mission of the organization. You promote the mission first and foremost, but how the gift annuity allowed them to do a gift they didn't think was possible. You know, a lot of boards and leadership, or especially business offices, they'll wonder, why would we ever do something like this? And the answer is generally that the gift annuity unlocks the opportunity for gifts you likely would not have gotten otherwise. And you may have gotten a bequest of those funds, but whether you would have gotten that amount through annual loyal giving, open question. What you hope for is people who do a gift annuity, they also do their loyal annual giving as well, that it doesn't interrupt. And our experience is it doesn't interrupt their loyal annual giving. It's an additional gift that you likely wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And it's irrevocable. Now, you're not going to get 100% at the end, as I talked earlier about the 50% residual, but 50% is greater than zero.
Yeah, and that's a good point. You know, on our end, we talk about this so much that one of the best ways to inspire donors is through your other donors and having donors hear their stories. And I also say this over and over again, but it's my favorite part of my job is talking to these donors, interviewing them. I oftentimes find that they just love sharing their stories.
Yeah.
And inspiring others.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And a lot of these donor testimonial stories, heck, it can be 80, 85% about them, why they did it, what inspired them to be supportive of the organization, all of that. But then what you want is the aha moment of, And I realized that for me, a gift annuity was another great way to both support the organization and assist either my extra retirement income or maybe retirement income for a loved one, that kind of thing. And the statement that the gift annuity unlocked the opportunity to plan a gift that I probably wouldn't have done otherwise. You know, yeah, I did an annual fund support. Maybe I also included them in my will, but this was another way that I could do it that I probably wouldn't have done otherwise, using assets or cash amounts that I wouldn't have done otherwise.
Yeah, so it's not just inspiring other donors to give, but offering them ways to have that epiphany that they didn't realize that they could give in a certain
Yeah,
way.
exactly. That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. So just zooming out a little bit, you mentioned that charitable gift annuities are relatively simple and also relatively complex. And so for larger organizations that have donors in states all over the country, you mentioned that the rates and the regulations and the rules differ from state to state. How has that landscape changed over time? And, you know, how should organizations deal with those issues and different regulations in every state?
That's a great question. You have to worry about the state where your annuity donors are, because the states that have these regulations are doing them to protect the citizens of their state. And so you've got to worry about the state where your donors are. Now, for a lot of organizations, a lot of their donors happen to be in the state where the organization is headquartered, but that's not always the case. So you got to worry about the states that you're marketing to and where your donors are. And ideally, of course, the state regulators want you to be registered before you do your first gift annuity in that state. Sometimes things happen and that doesn't quite happen, but it's ideal if you can register before you start promoting and closing gift annuities in a particular state. So obviously then you may not choose to register in all the states that require registration. You would cherry pick the states where your donors are, and not just all your donors, but where this target market of donors are. So obviously for some charities, their target market for donors like this might be Florida, you know, might be Arizona, southern warm state where a lot of retired people are, that kind of thing. And that's a way to pay attention to it. But the regulations are still there, and some have gotten quite complicated. Just in the last few years, New York changed its rules relative to rates. And so that's something that the American Council on Gift Annuities work closely with them to make sure their rates align with the American Council on Gift Annuity rates. As I mentioned earlier, California, the state of Washington, Florida have rules around asset allocation. Some states have rules around the gift annuity contract language that's used, et cetera. So these regulations at the state level have to be accounted for. Now, there are consultants, full-time consultants that are available for hire that would help an organization make sure they're doing the right things with registration. Many of these states that regulate require an annual statement, an annual registration report. So there's not just the original application, there might be ongoing registration requirements. So you definitely want to, let's say, get counsel to make sure you do it the right way. Now, maybe once you get it set up and you kind of know what you're doing, maybe your business office can handle the ongoing annual reporting. It's possible. But definitely, it's the kind of thing you want to get some good expert advice, particularly in the states that are particularly complex.
And establishing a CGA on that end of things, is that something that usually happens just in the process of the gift? Or if I was a national organization, would my marketing materials be different for mailings that I was doing in California as opposed to mailings that I was doing in North Dakota? Or would that all kind of happen on the back end? And just speak
that
generally.
That more would happen on the back end, for sure. Again, it's sometimes hard when you have, let's say, a national constituency, but you're only registered in a few states. You've cherry-picked your states. But sometimes you can't always control who looks at your website, for example, and you've got gift annuity information on your website. Now, you could say we're only going to offer gift annuities in these certain states. On the other hand, you don't want to cut yourself off to great potential. So you just have to evaluate as donors, say, step forward as a reply to marketing And if they're in a state that you're not registered, then I would say evaluate the situation and then explore getting registered very quickly. Now, some states are slow. We are dealing with state agencies here, but you would theoretically cherry pick the states that are most likely, but others could come up. But as I said, with your marketing, some of it is so, let's say, mass marketed with your website, email blasts, even letters, newsletters, that you can't always predict that it's just going to go in the certain state that you're registered in.
Right. Well, I'm not sure if you brought your crystal ball to the podcast today, but looking forward over the next 25 or even the next 100 years, what role do you see gift annuities playing in the future of plan giving, and what should gift officers do now to prepare for that?
Yeah, I think that for me, when I talk about plan giving, I always say the time is now, right? The time is now. The time is now to promote plan giving generally and get charitable gift annuities as part of that. Why? The wealth transfer. We've got the baby boomer generation, trillions of dollars, whatever. You see a different number every time you look it up, 54 trillion by 2045 or whatever dollar amount or year time frame, but it's a lot of money. And it's assets too, not just cash. And a lot of it's in retirement plans. So as I look over the next 25, 30, 40 years especially, I'm thinking market this to the boomers big time. They're your target market, and promote not just cash for the gift annuity, but assets. That's a big change I've seen in the last couple of years. I've gotten more gifts of stock for gift annuities, real estate for gift annuities. We've done a couple of farms, large farms for gift annuities. We've done grain from farmers, tractors from farmers. We've gotten all sorts of assets. And so being open-minded, not only as to doing gift annuities, period, but being a little open-minded about what assets you would take in exchange for a gift annuity. Of course, this qualified charitable distribution, that's targeted right at the boomers who have all these money in IRAs. So the QCDs for now, the QCD rule is rather limited. It's like a 1 year and done kind of rule. We don't have time to go into all the details of the qualified charitable distribution for a gift annuity, but the gifting of that, as well as the at death beneficiary designation for gift annuities, very important as well. And so this all adds up to a huge opportunity for gift annuities, as it does for all of planned giving. This boomer generation, time is now. And look, this is the time to talk to your boards of directors about marketing, increasing your marketing for these things. It does no good if you don't get the word out and market broadly and weave it with your staff. And I encourage all organizations to consider becoming a member of the American Council on Gift Annuities. I think it's not very expensive, and then you're plugged in to best practices. For example, on our website, we have information about the kinds of language you need in gift annuity contracts. The federal law requires a disclosure statement. That's very important. The gift annuity contracts have to be specific in language if it's a qualified charitable distribution for a gift annuity. But we have that kind of guidance on our website and available especially to members. So I have to put a plug in for that too.
Well, I do know that it's really important that the language for charitable gift annuities is very clear and concise and specific. So
yeah, you've got to give that
ACGA
disclosure.
That
was the byproduct of that class action lawsuit. And with the qualified charitable distribution rules for a gift annuity, that language has some very specific requirements in it as well. And we don't have time now to go through all those details, but they're out there. So it's only two pages, but you don't want to get tripped up on any of the wording in those two pages. And so it's important to have staff that know what they're doing in this regard.
Well, thanks, Phil. A big takeaway for me today is just how clear it is that charitable gift annuities continue to be very resilient and a very practical tool in plan giving, partly because of the work that the ACGA and folks like yourself have done. So much appreciated for
well,
us.
Well, we want to thank you,
community.
Grant, and the Sharp Group for this helpful conversation and for all the work you do in helping promote and market plan gifts, including gift annuities. You know, the counsel you give to organizations and so forth is extremely valuable. And we thank you for that.
And thank you, Phil. And our thanks to Phil Purcell for sharing his insights today on the charitable gift annuity and ACGA's work. And as mentioned, go visit the ACGA website. Consider becoming a member, and you can get that concise language that you need correct in your documents. So, and many other things. And if you found today's episode helpful, please subscribe and share it with colleagues in the field. As always, thank you so much for being a part of the conversation. Until next time, I'm Grant Miller.
Thanks for listening. We hope today's discussion gave you practical takeaways to grow your plan giving program. To submit questions and topics for future episodes, go to sharpgroup.org or listen to us on your favorite podcast app. If you found this podcast insightful, be sure to like, review, and subscribe. Until then, stay sharp.